Thanks for having me. It's great. Thanks, Sam, for letting me speak, take your place. That's really nice. Again, my name's Dave, and great to chat over dinner. I want to encourage you to get a, get a talkback form, which is one of these little guys in the middle, and also something to write with, a pencil. You need a pencil as well, or a pen, or whatever you use that you prefer. And do fill your name out on it. Do put a number on it, an email, contact detail if you had a question, a comment, anything you want to say about what I'm going to say today, anything from the front. Even use the back, like just write stuff on it. Really would value your feedback. Question to start with is, what happens to you when things don't go to plan? What happens to you when things that you plan don't go to plan? Do you freak out? You get super stressed. It's like, you know, paralyzed. Do you feel you're going to have an emotional breakdown? You know, you cycle through your mind, how would you have done things differently? How could you have prevented that bad thing from happening? And when it comes to like future dreams for your life, you go, how would you feel about the thing that you've worked so hard for, you're driven to succeed in or to do well in, is jeopardized? Has the potential to turn into a shattered dream. Bill Gates, anyone knows this guy? Bill Gates, yeah? Yep, I hope so, all right. Okay, founder of Microsoft, was one of those people. He's one of those people, okay? He wanted to pursue a career by blending business and computers, computer programming particularly. And he actually dropped out of Harvard University to do that. Now, you know, dropping out of uni, maybe that's the first step to having your dreams being jeopardized, but his dreams actually felt like they were being jeopardized when his first business failed. Okay, he wrote a computer program to produce like a report out of traffic data, and it actually didn't do what it was supposed to do. He put all this money, this time and effort into it, but it was too buggy. He couldn't do anything with it. And so, you know, that's a lot of room for self-doubt, isn't there? A lot of self-pity, a lot of feeling sorry for yourself with the hope that you'd make it into the business world. But then, right, after the failed business, the first one, he then started a new business, Microsoft, right? Everyone knows what Microsoft is, right? I hope so. Microsoft, yeah, just log on. Just look, Apple computers, like, yeah, okay, just go, this one here, right? Microsoft, what's it worth? Does anyone know what it's worth? How much? Lots, okay. $87.4 billion. $87.4 billion. He is on the Forbes's wealthiest people list, okay, because of Microsoft. Now, you would have thought, okay, young Bill Gates, okay, was hoping for money, for fame, for fortune, right? That was his dream, his goal, success, right? But now in his old age, like look at him now, that's a recent picture. He's a bit of a geezer, okay? He recently gave a graduation speech, okay? Right, regretting that he wasn't more informed about world equality in the world, okay? Wasn't more informed about world equality and doing something about it earlier in his life. And so for a man who's pretty much got everything, who's achieved his dreams, right? Creating a computer business empire and making lots of money out of it. He says in a number of tweets, right, to this graduation crew, okay? We're in the most peaceful time in our history, in our world. The world's not getting worse, it's getting better. It doesn't mean you ignore the serious problems in the world we face, but it means you can believe that they can be solved. Okay, that's what he believes now, right? This is, you know, for someone easy to say, if you've earned everything, you've achieved everything you wanted, it's easy for this kind of person to say these things, right? But we're here at uni, still struggling to get our dreams in order, to build our dreams, to get success. So, you know, if our hopes and our dreams, if they turn sour, how do you think you respond to shattered dreams? Would you sink into despair, self-loathing, just like how Naomi does in this story here in the Bible? Naomi, a woman, okay, who is the focus of our chapter in chapter 1 in Yezini, make sure you have that out, okay? She had a dream for her life. She had a dream. But you read that she was forced to leave her home, her land, and has suffered great loss, a loss of her husband and a loss of her sons. This is a woman, a story of a woman's life who has her whole life turned upside down. But what makes Naomi's failure story so different to Bill Gates' initial failure story is the acknowledgement of God existing and perhaps working in her life. So what I think from today, from chapter one of Ruth, and mind you, this zine contains the entire book of Ruth, so you can read ahead like if you want. But what I want to take away from today's passage is that God is still working in our lives when our dreams appear ruined. God is still working in our lives when our dreams appear ruined. And I think knowing this makes all the difference when your hopes or dreams are being shattered or are shattered, and you're tempted to live in despair and self-loathing. Let's have a look at the context of this situation here with Naomi and her family that they were living in, which we learn is generally, in the context that she's living in, people are living in godlessness and despair. If you have a look at the first verse here in your zine here, pull that open, page 3, okay? What does it say? It says that the story here is set in a time when there were judges, or when the judges ruled. And so the judges were the leaders of Israel, appointed by God to lead his people to victory over their enemies, right? To their neighboring nations, so they could settle into this place called the Promised Land. So to be living in the Promised Land, right? A great land of food, safety, and of plenty. This would be like, you know, owning your own home, living the dream. This is the living the dream if you live in the Promised Land. But we read in the first verse, again, that there's a famine in the Promised Land. There's a famine. And it seems a dream life in the Promised Land has been ruined because of this famine. But why? Well, if you have a Bible, which is okay, pull it out if you do. If you go back to the previous book, which is Judges, one of the verses in Judges 21:25, it says, "In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit." And in chapter 2 of the book of Judges, we're told that there's a whole generation of Israelites that ignored God, that ignored him and what he had done for them. And what's worse, they worshipped other gods, other idols of other nations. So the famine is brought onto the land by God as an act of judgment because of Israel's ignorance or disobedience of God. And so through this godlessness, it brings despair, because when you have a famine, you don't eat. And when you don't eat, what happens? You die, right? You die. You don't eat, you die, which means you need to do something about your situation so you can go get food. And so in this story, in this chapter, we began looking at the nation of Israel, zooms into one particular family, and we get insight into how it affects this one particular family. In verse 1, we zoom in on Naomi and her husband, Elimelech. And in verse 2, they have two sons. It says here, Mahlon and Chilion. And there's this potential promise of longevity and for family, right? Because having two sons increases your chances of having a longer family line, someone to succeed your family line, your family estate. But they all have to leave the Promised Land to move to Moab, which is a foreign land, to get food because of the famine. So what was seemingly a promising and a great life in the Promised Land actually turns sour. Imagine how you'd feel if you're Elimelech and Naomi. You'd expect to be living in a land of plenty, in your own family estate, with your own piece of land, but you don't have any food to eat. And so your life turns into despair. You start to question God and what he's doing about this situation. Where is he when you need him? But the situation for his family becomes worse, even more broken. In verse 3, look again, Naomi's husband dies, and her sons are married to Moabite women, okay, which is a bit awkward and embarrassing because it's an interracial marriage between an Israelite and a foreigner, in this case a Moabite. But after 10 years later, after they get married, her sons die. So Naomi is now left in a foreign land, okay, foreign land, two Moabite daughter-in-laws. She has no husband. She has no sons. which means she has no grandkids, which means there's no successor to inherit the family estate. All this happens while she is in a foreign land. If the dream life of the Israelite person was to live in the land God had provided for her family, for her people, that would have plenty of food, a place to live, a provision of a happy marriage, provision of a happy life with children to succeed their home, then from here, Naomi's situation definitely epitomizes a broken dream. Have a chat on your table here, just from that first paragraph, what we just read. How would you feel if you're in Naomi's shoes? How would you feel about Naomi's shoes? And what would you do if you were in her shoes? What would you do? Have a chat about that right now. I'll give you 2 minutes to do that. Go. Okay, another minute. Okay, we'll just start with the table at the back. Could you share what would you do if you're in Naomi's shoes? How would you feel? Just throw a saying out there.
Yeah, we didn't have anything.
Nothing. Okay, sure. Sure. No worries. This table here? Just a second. Yep. Well,
insecurity.
Insecurity?
Yeah, because yep. Then
all the security was like, yeah, the woman's a female security. In her society was her husband, her family, her sons. Yep. So insecure. Yep. Thanks. Cool. This table over here. Anything? Shout one out. Shout anything. How would you feel? Or what would you do if you were in her shoes?
What, that's the end?
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing more left for your life. Yep. Okay. This table here. Anything? Anything different?
Isolation in a foreign land.
Isolation. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. So loneliness, isolation. Yep. This table here? Anything here?
That idea of hopelessness, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
It's another word for the same thing.
Yeah, hopelessness. Yeah. Sure. Anything here? Anything different?
Wanting to go back home, people who knew
home. Yeah, the homesickness or something. Yeah, like longing to be back with her own people and because she's got no one left, essentially. Yeah. Yep. Cool. Thanks for sharing, guys. We're going to have another moment of discussion a bit later. But yeah, thanks for sharing. Okay. So you've got to remember, if you go towards the end of the chapter, okay, when Naomi has that, she's definitely feeling broken. Naomi, her name, if you didn't know, means pleasant or lovely. Okay. She was a God-fearing woman, believed in God, but he's so crushed by her situation, okay, that she wants her name changed to Mara. Mara, which means bitter. Okay, that's so you guys have hit it, right? She feels pretty down, pretty bad. And so to kind of just help us to understand a bit better, everyone in Australia pretty much wants to own a home, right? Okay? Pretty much. Maybe not all of them here, but okay, most people do. Because it creates security, okay? Creates security. If you're renting, so who's a renter here? Who rents out a home? Yeah, okay. What are the chances of you moving in the next 6 months? Pretty high, right? Pretty high, okay? Because you're at the mercy of your landlord. Yeah, you're at the mercy of your landlord, your real estate agent. You move out when you're told to move out, okay? You pay what you're told to pay in rent. You can't remodel your house. You can't change it the way you want it to be changed. It's not yours to say or do. in many ways, you know, not owning your own home can seem like, you know, so you have fewer freedoms. You know, with increasing house prices, you wonder, you know, could you ever achieve the dream? So when, you know, the former Treasurer of Australia says the starting point for a house to buy is to what? Is to get a good job that pays good money. Yeah, that's what he says, right? Okay, you're probably thinking, well, will my graduate job get my dream home? Will it? Because if you don't, you might feel, you know, you should change your name. You should change your name like Naomi did to permanent renter or, you know, broke or loser, you know, I don't know. But, you know, this is one area where people find security, okay? Look for security. And when it doesn't go to plan, we often ask God, why? Why is this happening to me in our difficulties? Not being able to secure a graduate job or internship or not being able to get the grades we want or, you know, losing loved ones, friends, family, people we trust. Discontentedness, huge. Not being able to feel safe in our space. Why has God allowed such a crushing thing to happen to Naomi? Can you relate to her, how she feels? Can you sympathize? When life just continues to push her down, disappoint her. Friends, this might be Naomi's situation here, but we need to keep in mind the bigger picture about what actually eventuates in her story. So if you flip over to chapter 4, so flip over to with me to chapter 4. Okay, and we're going to look at from page 10, 10 and 11. Okay. In verse 16, you can see that on the left, right side there, on page 11, on verse 16, this is a spoiler, okay? It's a real spoiler, but it's going to help us. All right? But it's important to know where we're heading with the story, because it actually gives you an insight to why this author wrote Ruth. And so it says in verse 16, okay, then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. Wow, there's a child. And in verse 17 says, the women living there said, Naomi has a son. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This is describing the start of a genealogy, a family line. In verse 22, it goes down, right down. And the genealogy ends with a person named David. King David. Okay, he's a significant person in the history of Israel, okay? And so we're reminded that this story, right, leads to King David, who will make their nation great, who would bring hope eventually through David to saving the world. So how could God work through such a difficult circumstance right now to bring about this kind of happy ending, so to speak? Well, in light of this context and moving forward, we can look a bit more closely on how Naomi and Ruth treat the broken situation that they're in. And so we're first going to look at Naomi. So flip back to chapter 1, back to your zines in chapter 1, where I think Naomi, in her attitude, she continually thinks despairingly about her life and her future. So from verse 8 chapter 1, let me get back to it. There you go. I'm going to read quickly from chapter 8. It says this. It says, then Naomi said to her two daughter-in-laws, go back each of you to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant each of you, may the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. And then Naomi kisses her daughter-in-laws goodbye. And from verse 11, flip over the page, verse 11, it says, return home, my daughters, she continues. Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons? Who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had another husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters. It is bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me. Although she might be still a God-fearer, a believer in God, after all that's happened, as a woman who prayed to God and hoped that he would show kindness to Ruth and to her other daughter-in-law, Orpah, you can feel that Naomi's outlook in her life is really, really bleak. Naomi's saying that there's no point following a bitter, husbandless, childless woman like her back to the promised land. Ruth and Orpah should go back to their own people, to their own Moabite families. And in verse 15 here, Naomi urges Ruth to return back to her Moabite country, to her people, to worship their gods, because she thought that they would have a better life, potentially a better life than the one that would have with Naomi in the promised land, living with God. You've got to remember, living in the promised land, living with a God who created the world, living with a God who helped Israel escape Egypt from their enemies, who helped defeat Pharaoh and his armies, a people who God had brought into the promised land by helping them defeat their other enemies to get into the land, to settle there, to produce plenty of food. Naomi just wants the best for Ruth and Orpah, supposedly, and she thinks that the bright future would be not with her in the promised land with the living God. But who was to say that these daughters would have a better future with their Moabite families? Who would think that, you know, living as an outsider of God's people would prove to be a better life? Although Ruth, the Moabite, stands by Naomi, the Israelite, and follows her back to the promised land, the writer in verse 19 and verse 22, gives us the vibe, okay, that Ruth, the foreigner, might not be welcome in the Israelite land. And that Naomi might have thought, well, this is a bit awkward for me. Like, I don't really want you following me, man, you know? But, you know, this is a completely different outlook, right, to what Ruth perceives the situation before them. You know, Ruth could assume the same self-loathing, self-deprecating, kind of depressing situation they're in, like her mother-in-law, but instead, she chooses to trust in God in the wake of what was happening in their tragic situation. Remember, Ruth lost her husband too. She probably felt uncertain about her future plans, her dreams of having a family and all that kind of stuff. And in verse 14 here, okay, we read that Ruth clung to Naomi. She clung to her to go with her to that land that was foreign to herself. Look at in verse 16 here, in Yazini here, on page 4, what Ruth says to Naomi. She says, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I'll be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." And so, in response to that speech that Ruth told Naomi, Naomi agrees. She says, "Yeah, sure, okay, come." The thing that's kind of amazing about this situation, about Ruth being a non-Israelite, is that she shows more devotion to God than Naomi, the Israelite. Okay? She shows more devotion to God, trusting in Him, what He will do for their future. Even though Naomi was already a member of God's family, God's chosen people, and Moabite's sort of ancestry wasn't. And so in verse 17, you can see here that Ruth uses the personal name of God, Lord, L-O-R-D, Lord, or Yahweh in Hebrew, in her description of God. It's a reflection of her personal relationship with God. It's like if you use a pet name or a nickname, a special name you have someone reserved that you would use only for them, or people would only use for you if you knew them personally. It's a relationship that's close. It's a special bond. And so this is how Ruth is treating her relationship with God, the God of Israel. And for someone from outside of the Israelite nation, this is incredible. This is amazing. Again, in verse 9, this adds to the kind of the surprise factor, okay, when Naomi returns back into the promised land, and all the women see her with Ruth. You know, they see Naomi, the Israelite, but then they see this foreigner, Moabite woman, returning with her. But by Ruth being with Naomi, okay, this is actually the beginning of how God is going to answer Naomi's prayer in showing kindness to Ruth by providing her a new home and a new husband. And we're going to see that over the next few weeks. But we're also seeing how God is using Naomi's tragic situation here because of Ruth's allegiance to God. That God is looking out for Naomi, unlike what Naomi says in her reflections in the last part of this chapter. If you go to verses 20 and 21 here, you know, how true is what Naomi is saying about her life? How true is it in an objective sense, right? Sure, at this particular moment, her dreams of a bright future are in tatters, but, you know, was it true that she really left left living under God in the promised land and to a foreign land feeling full, and then to return to Moab, okay? Return from Moab into the promised land to live in the presence of God, a God who's helping his people from the famine, providing relief, with a daughter-in-law. Is that really empty? Is that an empty thing? You know, Naomi kind of upplays her sad circumstances and kind of downplays her positive circumstances when she enters back into the promised land. And we can see kind of Ruth's attitude to her tragic situation is overshadowed by her trust in the Lord, which is so different to Naomi. If you recall how the book ends, right, from chapter 4, it's the beginning of something major, isn't it? Something really big. You know, Ruth didn't know she's going to marry someone who's going to be wealthy, okay? Have a son, become the grandmother of King David, a man who would help bring great wealth and success to their country, to their nation. But we see Ruth's faithfulness to God, it not only has an impact for her, herself, but also for her mother-in-law, Naomi. And so God was working through this difficult circumstance of both these women to bring about a hopeful future, which would bring hope for a whole nation through David, which would eventually bring hope for the whole world, the whole humanity, through David's line, through the family line, which eventually would see Jesus come into the world, who would save us from separation and rejection from God. So friends, if the future goal of your life and existence is to know God personally, you might need to do some self-assessing on where you stand with him right now. You know, we just read the continuation of an amazing plan of God saving Ruth and Naomi. And if you think or know that God has executed a plan to allow people to follow him, to turn back to him through Jesus, what steps are you kind of taking to turn back to him? If you have certainty in what eternity will be, which is live at peace with God, and to know that, yep, sure, there's a world we live in with disappointments and failures, but then there are also successes as well. You know, how does that compare to knowing that you have full success and assurance and future hopes and dreams that are going to be fulfilled through Jesus and in Jesus in eternity? But you know what? You may also be thinking, sure, that's great to know, okay, that there's a future hope in Jesus. Great. Cool. What about my life now? How do I cope with the everyday struggles of life? The disappointments, when I'm let down, the failures, the losses I'll experience. Well, I think we need to remember that God is still working our lives every day today through the people around us. You know, are you possibly overlooking the people in your life who God has put around you right now to encourage you, to support you, to bless you in your life now? You know, are there faithful Christians, people who follow Jesus, that you can lean upon, that can support you, that you can seek encouragement from when your hopes and dreams are shattered? Because you know, these people might be in front of you right now, and you just haven't noticed them. You've never noticed them, ever. Just like Naomi did. She didn't notice that Ruth would be that kind of person to her. You know, God has put amazing people in our lives. People of different ages, backgrounds, skills, gifts, to help us persevere with living a life of following Jesus now. A life potentially of struggles, of failures, of losses. But then a hope that we have of reaching eternal hope with Jesus, and that someone in front of you could potentially encourage you to continue to live the Christian life. So I wanted to encourage you to take a look around, maybe physically right now, maybe metaphorically in your mind, okay? Who's that person that you could lean upon? Who's that person you could encourage you? Someone you could lean upon for spiritual encouragement and your spiritual walk with God. I'm going to pause there for a minute, answer some questions. So if you've got any questions, fire away. Or if you're too shy, you can write them on this. That's fine. But moment for questions. I'll try and answer them. Any takers? Before I conclude. None. Aiden, you have one? Yeah, sure.
What do you reckon is the significance of Naomi having had to suffer as opposed to just kind of like God could have just used Naomi's original family with her like two sons to bring about David,
yeah,
Jesus?
Yep.
Why did it have to be like a bad story turning into a good story as opposed to just like being a good story to begin with?
Yeah, sure. So the question is, why did Naomi have to go through such suffering or pain?
Do you think it's significant?
Do I think it's significant?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Yeah, yeah. So it's sad that Naomi, she needs to go through, well, she goes through fail. I don't know if she needs to, but she does, right? I don't know why, but she does. And it's really sad. However, when this particular, I forgot, focuses or kind of cases in the Bible, particularly in the Old Testament, of people going through great trials, we get to learn a lot about the character of God, more so, but also how God works through a particular person's life. So for Ruth, okay, yep, she was in the promised land. She lived with her people. She was sweet. There was a famine because people rebelled, sure. So she was essentially ejected. She needed to leave. But we know at the end that she gets to return to the land. She gets to have a son, which is better than what she had before. And her potential son was going to be the grandfather or the great-grandfather of King David. So, in fact, her circumstances are a lot better than what she started, which is what I tried to highlight earlier. If we think about, there's other people. So another person would be like Job, similar kind of scenario, his situation. He was pretty wealthy, pretty well-off guy. Apparently he was a righteous man. Is that right? He was a righteous man, okay? But then he's afflicted by God. A lot of bad stuff happens to him. His friends reject him. But then at the end, he's reinstated, but more so, much better off. Why? I don't know. But God chooses to use that situation to bless him, and in this case, to bless Ruth through great trial, to help her grow, I suppose. That's my current thinking. But in terms of like why she had to go through it, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. But it definitely shows me how good God is in that. Yep. Thanks. Yep. Any other questions? Okay. Ask me after or write them down. I'm not afraid. I'll try to answer them. I'm surprised someone hadn't asked me how far is Moab to Bethlehem yet. I did Google it quickly before I got up because I thought, oh, maybe someone asked that. Apparently it's 7 to 10 days walk. Yeah. I know the kilometerage wasn't clear though, because someone said 218 kilometers. Someone else said 60 miles. Like, I don't know. Is that 1.6 kilometers to 1 mile. So that's like what? 90 Ks maybe? I don't know. Something like that. I don't know, potentially 60 to 90 Ks. I don't know, it's not clear, but it's certainly out. Moab is outside of the promised land, yeah? A neighbouring, pardon? The Rift. Oh yeah, it is, totally. It's totally west, it's totally west. Yeah. No, it's east, because west is the Dead Sea. Anyway, yeah, cool. Okay, let me conclude. We start with the question, when it comes to future dreams in your life, future hopes, how would you feel about if that thing that you're driven to succeed in is jeopardized or has potentially turned into a shattered dream. How do you react? How do you respond to that? How do you feel about that? You know, if our hopes and our dreams turn sour, which could happen, yeah, how do you think you'd respond to that? How do you think you respond to that shattered dream? A failed venture, a broken plan. You know, would you sink into self-despair, a self-loathing, self-despair, you know, like just like Naomi did in the story? Or would you follow Ruth's example of choosing to trust in God, you know, what he would do next for her life and for her plan in spite of this sad, tragic situation? I think today's passage is telling us that God is still working in our lives even when our dreams appear ruined. Knowing this makes all the difference when your hopes and dreams have been shattered and you're tempted to live in despair and in self-loathing. Because we can't see God, right, working in our lives actively, right, like physically here, okay, it doesn't mean that he's not active. It doesn't mean he's not working, okay? And I think a clear picture of how God has worked in our world was in this amazing plan, okay, to bring hope through Naomi's son, through to King David, and to finally reach us through the moment of Jesus arriving on earth to bring hope for all of humanity. But we also need to remind ourselves of how God is helping us now through the people around us. He is placed around us in our moments, difficult moments right now. These are amazing people, right, that we know exist. And they're actually closer to us than what they appear that they really are. Who are the people that you can identify that God has potentially placed right in front of you to help you in your difficulties? How can these people encourage you to turn to God in your difficult times, difficult moments? However, on the flip side, right, God might be using you to help someone else in their difficult moments. You know, how could you make yourself more visible, more out there, more noticeable, so that you can remind them of the hope they have in Jesus, and that God has a bigger plan for them and is continually working in their life right now. Friends, God is still working in our lives even when our dreams appear ruined. Ailey's going to come up and pray, and then we'll continue on.